Hey, we're back here in the home studio, the Red Room. I think that's been taken. But that's where we are for another edition of Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt joining me here. Welcome back, Bruce.
It's good to be back, Rich.
Talking a little baseball again this week. Last week we talked about a terrific book, Doc Donnie the Kid and Billy Brawl, from Chris Donnelly. And this week, a wonderful new book about the great Willie McCovey.
Yeah, the University of Nebraska Press is on fire with good baseball books, as they always are. And this is another one like the previous book from Nebraska. And if you saw McCovey play, which we both did, we're old enough to have seen McCovey play, you knew what a great baseball player he was. But I had no idea what a great human being he was.
No.
I mean, this guy was loved by everybody he played for, worked with, played against. You know, Sparky Anderson said, "You're crazy if you pitch to him because he'll hit 800 home runs." And he was a devastating power hitter. And had it not been for injuries, and as you and I were talking off air, Mantle and Ortiz come to mind with the number of injuries, the number of debilitating problems that slowed their careers. I mean, and all three are Hall of Famers, but McCovey probably could have surpassed everybody but maybe Willie Mays of his generation, somebody who he played with and who he was friendly with. And he wasn't the five-tool player that Mays. He was not a great outfielder, really a pretty good first baseman. But when you look at his numbers and you look at how long he played and you look at the difference he made on the teams he was on, he was a hell of a baseball player. But man, as a guy, everybody just loved this. A whole section in this book, and it's, as I say, a giant among giants, the baseball life of Willie McCovey, that is just dedicated to people saying nice things about Willie McCovey and talking about how tough it was to play against him. Pitchers that just, even Bob Gibson used to say, "Man, I just don't want to pitch to that dude."
Yeah, and a guy, too, that other players had so much respect for that they always went out of their way to meet him when they got the chance.
Yeah, they said whenever he would go take batting practice, players from the other team, if they could come over, would come over just to introduce themselves to Mr. McCovey. You know, and you also think that people often forget this. If Ted Williams had played in Yankee Stadium, God knows how many home runs he would have hit. If Mickey Mantle had played in Fenway Park, how many would have gone over the monster? I have no idea. Willie McCovey played in a ballpark at Candlestick for most of his career, which was a terrible place to play baseball. And they said he figured out the wind currents and actually would try to hit the ball down both power alleys, either going the opposite direction, because he knew that was where the wind was. That if you tried to pull the ball too hard, and he was naturally a dead pull hitter, it just would die in the wind. And so he was great on the road. He knew how to hit on every place in the road. But think about a guy going out and looking at the wind and looking at the flags and studying stuff and thinking, well, if I'm going to be a success here, I got to do that. I mean, that's not your average ball player.
And just a guy who year in and year out, even at a time when teams weren't looking for power. They were looking for speed, the artificial turf stadiums. It was a different type of game then. But this was a guy who, whenever he was healthy, you could always count on for 35 or 40 homers and 100-plus RBIs year in and year out.
And he didn't strike out a lot either. What I think that was interesting, he came in 59, and his last year was 73. With the Giants, and then he played with the Padres for 3 years, and then after that, he goes back to San Francisco, plays for Oakland for a year, and then goes back to the Giants. He plays until 1980. 1980, yeah. Folks.
So he played in four decades.
In four decades, absolutely. And it was in the minors before that, so it wasn't like he walked in and day one started playing there in the majors. But he ends up, over that period of time, with some pretty impressive statistics. And one of the things he was really proud of was RBIs. Now, he did hit behind Willie Mays for a long time, which didn't hurt. And Willie Mays would not stretch a single into a double if he knew he could, because that would take the bat out of McCovey's hand.
Right.
And that was a really interesting story about that part, and how he may sort of denied it and then laughed and giggled because he knew that a two-run home run was more likely than if they walked McCovey, that the next hitter was not gonna hit a three-run home run.
I found it interesting, too, and we think of Willie Mays as being a beloved player, and he certainly was, but that there were San Francisco fans who embraced McCovey as being one of their own, but still looked at Mays as a transplant from New York.
Yes, they really seemed to hold anybody that had played in New York, hold it against them. Now, what's interesting, I would argue there is no state in the nation that can claim a better outfield than Alabama.
Oh, absolutely. Right. We've talked about that before. Yeah.
You got Henry Aaron. We got Willie McCovey. We got Willie Mays. We have Billy Williams. We have Cleon Jones. And I believe Tommy Agee. I could be wrong about Agee. That's two all-star outfields, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that he and Mays had that in common. Now, Mays and McCovey also played in the Jim Crow South in the minors for Mays with the Birmingham Barons and McCovey at Sandersonville, Georgia, and some other places. So one of their bonds when they came up to the big leagues was that they had come through that, and there were a lot of other players that hadn't. And they roomed for a while briefly, and they did try to really compliment each other. Mays was known as being a little prickly by a lot of people. I had the chance to talk to someone who worked with him regularly in his retirement, as sort of an ambassador in the press area of the new ballpark. But he never let, and McCovey never let, and Orlando Cepeda, when he played with the Giants, they never let the stardom get in the way. You didn't have to be the top dog. And they kept finishing second year after year after year to the Dodgers. When they finally get to the World Series, you know, and Jim Davenport, who was a very good third baseman, a very colorful guy. I remember him from when I was a kid, being one of the people I got his card in my first pack of baseball cards. Talked about the fact that when they got to, it wasn't that they were all business on the field, you know, to get that. Well, he's fun in the clubhouse and he's all business. But they were focused on what they were all the time. That how Natalie McCovey always dressed, how he wanted his uniform to be perfect, and like because he thought he was representing something.
Right.
And he wanted to be a good representative. You know, I'd want teenage boys to read this book if they wanted to learn how to be both a good teammate and a good role model. I also thought that what Bruce Bocci, I wanted to read what Bruce Bocci and Willie Mays both said. Mays, Max fans will love this book. They'll enjoy reliving his great moments and appreciate getting to know him better as a man. He was such a good hitter that I wouldn't steal second base because I didn't want the pitcher to walk him. Okay. I mean, it's a Willie Mays. McCovey was, this is Bruce Bocci. McCovey was such a big man and such a kind man. He made a lasting impression on me when he come into the clubhouse. He was always really positive. He'd always stop my office and say, "Hey, Boch, how you doing?" He was one of the coolest things about coming to San Francisco. He'd give me time and show me respect. I remember catching when he was up to hit, and I'd think, wow, because of the way he carried himself and the grace to his swing.
And but the way he carried himself, too, and the story of late in his life, and it's sad, but it also said a lot about the kind of person he was when he had the problems physically. He did not want to go through amputation.
Yeah.
And ended up being in a wheelchair for quite a bit of time at the end of his life. But because, I think as he put it, he wanted to be what he thought of as a whole person.
Yeah, I came in as a whole person. I want to go out as a whole person. Kind of. And I, you know, there are a lot of times we get books about a player that goes way back, Oscar Charleston or Satchel Paige or Urban Shocker. You know, we have had some great books over the years. This one I liked because I remember him, and I remember thinking whenever he was facing the Mets or the Yankees, look out.
Yeah.
And it was an impossible team not to like the Giants. And when you think about it, at one point, Orlando Cepeda, Willie Mays, and Willie McCovey were all on the same baseball team. along with Juan Marichal.
And great that the Giants remembered him when they built the new ballpark and created McCovey Cove.
McCovey Cove, yeah. There's a story in here that somebody was sitting up on the top of Candlestick Park. You got to get down from there because that's the only way I can stop McCovey. that they call it McCovey Cove, and the people are out there in boats with nets ready to fish the baseballs that land out there. And one of the things you learn is that the respect these other guys had for him by how far and how hard he hit the ball. It's a story where he hit the ball so hard when the outfielder picked it up and threw it back, right? And half the cover's torn off.
Yeah. The book is A Giant Among Giants, The Baseball Life of Willie McCovey by Chris Haft, and another one from the University of Nebraska Press.
Yes, and next one will be from Nebraska, too, and it'll be about sports and resistance in Boston, sort of racial history of sports in Boston. It's a series of essays, and Devin McCourty's introduction is worth the price of the book. It's really fabulous.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.